No Direction, and Paizo team up to bring you the Gen Con 2018 seminar coverage. Today's episode, Paizo 2018 and Beyond. No Direction would like to thank our advertising sponsor, the Roll for Combat Starfinder Actual Play Podcast. Listen at rollforcombat.com.
Well, I think we can probably get started.
Bring it on.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Paizo 2018 and Beyond seminar. I am Eric Mona. I am the publisher and chief creative officer at Paizo, which basically means I manage the editorial and art departments and am, you know, pretty much the guy who decides what books we do with the input of everybody else at the table and some of our other folks at Paizo. Speaking of which, why don't you guys take a moment to introduce yourselves?
Hi there. I'm Jason Bowman. I'm the director of game design. You probably know me from the team that makes you buy new rule books.
I'm Rob McCrary. I'm the creative director for Starfinder.
And I'm Adam Daigle. I'm the managing developer for Pathfinder.
So I've asked a nice cross-section of folks from the creative team to join us up here, and these three folks are going to be able to talk about the various things and projects that they're involved with. The biggest, you know, thing about Paizo 2018 and Beyond is that here at the show, we released the playtest version of Pathfinder 2nd Edition. Are you all aware that had happened? Yeah. Okay, good.
I've run into like two people so far who are like, what?
Yeah. So that kind of drives a lot of, you know, the and beyond portion of this presentation. The books released this week, and so we've got, of course, the playtest rulebook. We have the Doomsday Dawn adventure. We've got the flip mat for the adventure, and then as a digital file, we have the Pathfinder playtest bestiary, which has got how many monsters ended up in that thing?
It's over 200.
Yeah, so quite a lot of monsters. Right now, the focus of everybody at Paizo, the focus of ideally a whole bunch of you guys and other people here at the show and all over the world who have picked up the book, is on playtesting the rules and making sure that the vision that Jason and his team have for the new future of Pathfinder as a game is the right one, you know, not just for us and for the design perspective, but also for you guys and for your campaigns and what your expectations are for the game. And so when we get back, and indeed already, you know, in the form of message boards and stuff, we're already getting a lot of comments. And, you know, Tanya over in our OP area has been hearing a lot of commentary from people who have been playing the game. And very shortly, the formal playtest for the Doomsday Dawn adventure is going to begin. And that will have new playtest surveys popping up on a pretty much biweekly basis as we work our way through the Doomsday Dawn adventure. Somewhere in the middle there's going to also be a quite large sort of general survey about the rules and perhaps...
Broken up into a number of pieces, yeah. But yeah.
And perhaps other things as, you know, we refine the system based on your feedback. So keep an eye on pathfinderplaytest.com, which is, of course, where you can download all that stuff. And we will be playtesting it ourselves shortly. We did some gaming and playtesting of it before we published it, of course, but that was only a couple of groups, and so there's a lot of people at Paizo who are eager to, you know, put the rules through their paces big time, who maybe don't work on Jason's team, and we will be doing live playtests from the office on our Twitch channel at twitch.tv/officialpaizo. We have not announced the schedule for that yet, but you can look for that in just a couple of weeks. And that'll be different teams of folks doing short, you know, probably two-hour sessions. We'll probably pause after each of the encounters and talk about how we felt like they went. And then the folks who've been watching, you know, live, watching the stream, will be able to kind of, we'll turn to you guys and say, well, how did that look? You know, and we'll have a conversation. You guys can get to see a little bit about how the inside playtesting process works at a game company. So that should be fun. And so really a huge, huge, huge part of our focus is on the second edition. And right now that means on the second edition rules and getting those right. The easiest thing for me to talk about in terms of previewing what books we're releasing between now and the middle of next year is in the role-playing line, the hardcover role-playing rules line, because there are no releases in that line. It's not that there's a reprieve. That team is working very, very hard on what will be the first slate of releases for Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I thought I had the rest of the year off.
No. Certainly our intention is to be updating, you know, based on playtester feedback and things, and our intention is to release the 2nd Edition final version here at Gen Con next year. Now, this process is only just beginning, you know, so ideally the feedback and our ability to implement it works hand in hand, and I don't get fired. And that'll be nice. Yeah. And so that's the plan. So there's going to be no books in that line. You know, Jason, one thing that I'm interested in, because I don't know the answer, and maybe these folks are interested as well.
Oh, boy.
So we're not going to be releasing products, and you're going to have, you and the other designers will be on our Paizo Friday show, I think at least every other week, to kind of update people on the playtests and take live Q&As from people watching. But I saw a question on the message boards the other day, and it was, okay, so presumably part of that will be you guys saying, oh, you know, this feat that gives you a +2 actually should be a +5. And should the players implement that feedback as they're playtesting?
Sure.
Like, what's your thinking?
The process for this, you know, the Doomsday Dawn Adventure is divided up into 7 parts. We're going to take it in chunks, right? The first chunk here, we have about 3.5 weeks to do the playtesting of. And then part 2, we're only going to give you 2 weeks. And then it's 2 more weeks for all the remaining parts. We're giving you a little time here on the front end to get back from Gen Con, to read the book, to learn how to play, to make characters, your first characters, and all that. What we're going to be doing after that is, Eric mentioned these, we're going to be having every time a window closes, and you can still play after the window closes, we're not going to come and take that part of the adventure away from you. The week after, we will be taking a very hard look at all the survey responses we get. And we'll be using some of that data to help inform our understanding of the game and how it's playing. In some cases, that might lead us down directions of things that we feel we need to change. It is quite possible that at some point during the playtest, we will release like an official, like, here's an errata sheet with a bunch of things we want everyone to change and implement now. I don't think there's going to be too many of those. I can't say how many there's going to be until we get into the playtest and start getting feedback from actual play. It's a little tricky to understand how many changes we're going to want to try and test. I know that there are some systems that we're looking at to possibly test during the playtest that weren't included in the book. We may release a couple patch updates like that through simple PDFs throughout the process. But once again, some of that is, what do we have time for? What's the focus look like? What do people have capacity for? So that's the general plan. I think we're also going to be talking in some ways just about what we're planning on changing for the final game. Even right now, there's a number of systems that we're already giving, you know, kind of a hairy eyeball to. Because we knew going in that they were experimental. Yeah. Some of them are a little tricky. Some of them are even a little downright scary. And there's some of those that I think probably won't survive in their current state. I can tell you right now, the death and dying rules are probably going to change at some point in time. We had like 6 versions of those rules before the book went to the printer. We narrowed it down to 1, and we were never perfectly happy with it. So there's probably going to be at least, probably internally 3 or 4 more versions, and hopefully only 1 more that you'll have to put up with. So, you know, those are the sorts of things I think you can look forward to seeing throughout the playtest process. We want to be very transparent about what we're doing and the impact that you guys are having on us. You know, running a playtest is an awful lot of work. And for the next, you know, 3 or 4 months, we're going to be reading an awful lot of message board posts, going through an awful lot of surveys, and corresponding with you guys through not just our boards, but also through Twitch. And we wouldn't do that if it didn't yield us the results of a better game. Right? You know, the feedback from you guys makes our game better. And that's why we do it.
Okay, let's talk about first edition Pathfinder a little bit, because in between now and next Gen Con, we still have a number of releases. We just put out the Planar Adventures hardcover book last month. That'll be the final new first edition book, but we will continue to delve back into the list of Pathfinder rule books with our pocket editions. So many of you have seen the paperback versions. Our goal is to get, if not every single Pathfinder hardcover in that version, pretty much all of them, and then keep them in print as long as people keep buying them. So we know that some people are going to wait until we've got 20 classes in Pathfinder 2nd Edition so that they can accurately, you know, know, transfer their character or their campaign or whatever. We know some other people are just not going to, you know, second edition is not going to appeal to them. They want to continue playing first edition. So we're, if you want to buy those rule books, we will happily sell those to you. There are like 35 of them. And so hopefully if someone's looking at second edition and saying, you know, this isn't really for me, hopefully they don't have all 35 books and there's still some new stuff for them to check out. But we're going to be keeping those soft cover ones in print. But there is still some new first edition content coming, and that comes primarily in the form of the player companion and the campaign setting lines. And Adam, I wonder if you could kind of take us through from honestly, really from here till the end of the edition.
Okay.
And talk about those two lines.
Also with the adventure path, we talked a little bit yesterday about the final first edition adventure path called the Tyrant's Grasp, which deals with Tarbafon and all sorts of undead hijinks there. And then moving into the campaign setting line, we're going to have, as we do with all of our adventure paths, Return of the Rune Lords is going to end, so we're going to have a poster map folio for Return of the Rune Lords. And then moving forward from there, we're going to release Concordance of Rivals. We've done Book of the Damned. We've done
Chronicle of the Righteous.
Yes, Chronicle of the Righteous. And the other book that the Angel Tabaris had written was Concordance of Rivals, that deals with neutral outsiders. And then following that, we're going to have a poster map folio for the Tyrant's Grasp adventure path. And then our final first edition campaign setting book is going to be Druma. We're going to talk about the Nation of Druma, which was championed by our own John Compton and Thurston Hillman, who are both obsessed with it and have come up with some really crazy ideas for a nation that we have barely really talked about.
So Druma is a country that I invented when we were writing the campaign setting back in the day, and it is like a crazy merchant kingdom where the merchants also follow this like quasi-religious cult called the Prophecies of Calistrade, and it's all about making money, and they have weird dietary prohibitions, and they wear long white gloves, and they don't want to touch other flesh, and they're just weird religious kooks who also happen to have a ton of money. And John, basically the reason I think that he sold me on this is he's like, oh, I got this great idea. What if as these Druman cultists, merchants become more and more powerful, that they start ingesting like gold and precious metals and infusing their body with this ingested minerals and stuff, and then eventually they like calcify into these like metal like mummies, and I'm like, yes, write the book. So I'm excited about that. Adam, before you go into the player companion line, I did want to kind of circle back a little bit to the Tyrant's Grasp adventure path. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons, really another reason why we're going to focus on Druma, is that the region that Druma is in, which is maybe you'd call it the Lake and Carthen region, which is sort of the center middle of the main continent, of the northern continent of the Inner Sea region, that region is going to see a lot of tumult in the very near future. We have with the Whispering, with the Tyrant's Grasp adventure path, Tarbafon, the Whispering Tyrant, the immortal Wizard King Lich, who is on the cover of the both versions of the hardcover campaign setting we did for Pathfinder. So he's the big bad guy fighting Sione and Valoros. His imprisonment under the Tower of Gallowspire in Usulov sort of forms kind of a big part of the modern, you know, era, starts the modern era of the campaign setting. And, he's coming back. And one of the reasons that he's coming back is we thought it would be cool to do it. But the other reason that he's coming back plays into something that I want to talk a little bit about, again, in relation to second edition Pathfinder. So one thing about the world of Pathfinder that not a lot of people pay a ton of attention to is that the years in Galarian map to the years in the real world. So every real world year that passes, a year in Galarian passes as well. So the first products that we put out back in 2007 were set in 4707 AR, and the books that we're putting out this year in 2018 are set in 4718, and the books that we put out next year are going to be set in 4719. Now, when it comes to things like adventure paths, we don't really go into huge depth about this. We don't like have a big sidebar that's like, this adventure takes place on this specific date, because we want to give people the flexibility to play these things in whatever order they want. But there has been kind of an ongoing timeline since the beginning. That's a little more evident if you play Pathfinder Society Organized Play, which is based on years of active continuity and stuff. But it's always been part of the campaign setting. And so when we produce the campaign setting materials for second edition Pathfinder starting here at Gen Con next year, we will be officially sort of saying, okay, it's 4719. And instead of creating a whole bunch of different crazy things to like change the campaign setting and blow it up and make, oh, there's another asteroid that hits the world, or, you know, suddenly everyone who was a witch before is now a wizard, or some of these things that we've seen in other edition shifts over the years of other games. Instead, what we're going to do is we're going to say, okay, let's assume at this point that all of the first edition adventure paths have been completed and have been completed successfully, because after all, it's you guys who have done it, and I don't want to have us be like, well, actually, you know, the bad guys won that one, you know. And so what we're going to do is we're going to look at each of our adventure paths and probably some of our older modules as well and sort of say, what are the implications of a successful completion of this adventure path? And probably the biggest one is the Wrath of the Righteous adventure path. The Wrath of the Righteous adventure path was all about going up to the World Wound, which is this literal rift in the world between Galarian and the Abyss, where demons were flying through constantly, and they had all kinds of crusades and things to put it down. Well, if the Wrath of the Righteous has been completed successfully, the World Wound is closed. There are still a bunch of demons in the country that used to be called Sarkoris, but they are no longer being replenished on an hour-by-hour basis. And so we thought, one of the great things about the World Wound in the first 10 years of Pathfinder is the kind of looming menace just over the horizon that could threaten the whole world. And we are bringing Tar-Baphon back from his imprisonment to kind of replace that element and introduce a new sort of enemy to the campaign. So the Tyrant's Grasp adventure path, you will be... did you guys go into... Were you in that seminar?
Yeah.
Did you guys go into depth about how it starts and everything?
Yeah.
Okay. So do you want to tell people how it starts?
Go ahead.
All right, so basically, who's familiar with the Nation of Lastwall in here? I don't know how much, like, everyone is into the campaign setting, but Lastwall is this nation of paladins that was formed specifically to imprison and defeat the Whispering Tyrant Lich 1,000-plus years ago. I can't remember. And... you are all playing characters who are from Lastwall, and in the first encounter of the first adventure of the Tyrant's Grasp adventure path, you wake up and you are in the Boneyard, which is where dead people and Galarian souls go after they die, and you have all basically been killed by a giant negative energy sort of bomb that wipes out an entire city in the Lastwall. And all the psychopomps, who are the outsiders, who will be detailed in the Concordance of Rivals, actually,
yep.
They are the ones who are responsible for souls being ushered to their final resting place, and they realize that something terrible has occurred, and there's something special that I won't get into about your characters that really draw you to their attention, and they send you back to life, to Galarian, to the Lastwall, to figure out what is happening. And the place is a kind of a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and you've got to deal with that. So this happens on camera. This is something your player characters can experience, and ultimately, it is about replacing and finding the fragments of the. Isn't it about finding the fragments of the Shattered Shield?
There's part of that, yeah.
Yeah,
for sure.
And also different. It involves Erasne, who is the former former herald of Aridin, our main god of humanity, also dead. So anyway, so it should be really cool. It's a big fight against the Lich Lord. I don't want to give away the end, but the ramifications of that adventure path and what it means for the Tar-Baphon and what it means for the region really are going to be a big part of the second edition sort of presentation of the campaign world. So we're setting up a lot of stuff, and if you imagine that a giant Lich Lord is setting up camp on an island in the middle of a lake here, and the city of Absalom, which has a piece of rock that if you touch can make you into a god, which is something maybe he'd quite like, is here, and this country, Druma, is here, it's kind of an interesting place for it to be. So lots of opportunities. So lots of opportunities for adventure coming up for Druma.
Liches.
Daigle, you want to talk a little bit more about the player companions?
Yeah, sure. So far, for the first half of 2019, we have already announced Wilderness Origins. That's going to be kind of a companion to Ultimate Wilderness. There's going to be a lot more options for shifters and dealing with pretty much any sort of like outdoorsy type character. We've also already announced Heroes of Galarian, which is a player companion that's going to talk about different heroes and different characters and give character options from a lot of nations across the world that we haven't really had a chance to delve too deeply into. And then the final one is one that we don't have a title set for, but it's essentially going to deal with some of the deities and god figures that we haven't really had a whole lot of time to talk about, and give some good rules options for that for the people who are feeling like, oh man, first edition's ending and I'm never going to get information on this Imperial Lord. Well, in this book you'll get that.
So it's kind of our last chance at first edition to get some of those weird cults and different little quasi-religions
right.
and stuff. So, all right, so as it's been for about a year and a half now, the player companion and the campaign settings kind of swap every other month. So just to quickly recap, the January is Wilderness Origins, February is the return of the Rune Lords poster map folio, March is this Heroes of Galarian book, April is the Concordance of Rivals, May is the Tyrant's Grasp map folio and this Cults of Galarian, or what the name TBD, and after that in June is the Druma Prophet and Prophecy book. So that is kind of what's coming up, and then in July is when all of the second edition stuff hits, kind of all at the same time. And before we get too much more into that, I would like Rob to bring us up to speed on his plans, and really our plans, for the Starfinder role-playing game, including a big product announcement that was just made here at the show.
That's correct. So we're really excited because Starfinder's been out for a year now, so we really feel it's hitting its stride. We just finished up the first adventure path, Dead Sons, for Starfinder. So that's just wrapped up, and we just released Starfinder Armory here at the show with a whole bunch of new equipment options. That's our most recent stuff. Coming out in the main line this fall is Alien Archive 2, which is full of all sorts of new aliens, both to fight and to play, because just like in the first Alien Archive, we want to give players lots of options for lots of cool new aliens to play as player characters. Also, wrapping up this year, or starting actually this month, we start our next Starfinder adventure path, Against the Aeon Throne. This is a bit of an experiment for us because we're going for a 3-volume adventure path instead of a 6-volume adventure path. So it's a little bit of a shorter campaign, a little more manageable. This takes you out into the vast, the sort of more unexplored region of the galaxy to go up against the Aslanti Star Empire. And we follow that by the Signal of Screams adventure path, which is also a 3-volume adventure path. And this one starts at a higher level. This one starts at 7th. So you can play it directly as a sequel to Against the Aeon Throne. So this is for the first time. You can take your characters from one adventure path and seamlessly move them into another adventure path. So we're really interested. This is kind of like an experiment for us. So we're really interested in hearing people's feedback on how they like that, both the shorter format and also starting an adventure path at a higher level. Then starting in the new year, in February, we go back to the 6-volume format, to the Dawn of Flame adventure path. We talked a bit about that in our Starfinder adventure path panel earlier in the con. This involves Inside the Sun. If you're not familiar with much of Starfinder setting, the sun has a place called the Burning Archipelago in it, sort of this magical collection of bubble cities that float somewhere near the outer reaches of the sun. And, someone decides that they want the sun for themselves, coming in from the Plane of Fire. So the adventure path kind of involves going deeper and deeper into the sun and finding the technology to allow you to do that, and stopping a bunch of Efreeti from conquering the sun and possibly even worse. And then that brings us into the spring, where we're really excited. What we announced earlier in the show is the Starfinder Beginner Box. This is, if you're familiar with the Pathfinder Beginner Box, it's a very similar way. It's a nice introductory rules to get people into Starfinder. It's all in one box set, so there's a player's book, a GM's book, there's an adventure, pawns, a flip mat, pre-generated characters, you can play the iconics, plus blank character sheets. It's a great way to get people into the game. If they find the whole Starfinder core rulebook a bit daunting, this could be a lot more fun to sort of get them in there. We're really excited. We've been working really hard on it. We're almost done. And, yeah.
Great.
Did I leave anything out?
No, I think you got it. I mean, we've got a bunch of flip mats, of course. And
Flip mat every other month?
Yeah,
we have the Starfinder Critical Hit deck.
That's coming out in December.
December, yeah. So if you're familiar with the Pathfinder Critical Hit deck, And it's similar to that, although in Starfinder, a lot of weapons already have critical hit effects built into the weapons, particularly as you get up into higher levels. And this is going to provide some different options. If you score a critical, you can choose to either use your weapon's critical hit effect or some of the more interesting options on these cards.
Okay, cool.
But to be clear, I'll be able to blow someone's head clean off.
Almost assuredly.
Good.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Right.
Possibly with your mind.
Oh, good.
Ooh, very good. Actually, yeah, that mental attack, the first level spell, is so brutal on Starfinder.
Mind thrust, yeah.
Yeah, mind thrust, yeah.
2D10.
Holy God. Okay. The Adventure Card Game. I want to talk about that a little bit. We haven't had many major releases in the Adventure Card Game for a while, and that is because some of the feedback we've been getting from our retail partners and things is that the size of the box, the price point of each of the individual adventure paths we were putting out were a bit problematic, as was the individual adventure decks that we were putting out. After a while, you just get a huge pile of these decks, and they're hard to store and especially hard to display. So although we've still, over the last several months, released a few additional decks to have like Ultimate Wilderness characters in your game and some other options like that, Ultimate Equipment decks, fairly recent one, we are kind of going back to the mat in 2019, and in May we will be releasing a new version of the Adventure Card Game, still compatible with the old version, but just a new format. So the way we're doing that is we're going to release a base set that's going to have all of your, you know, blessings and all of your main spells and weapons and things, so you don't have to rebuy those basic cards every time there's a new story or an adventure path, which is how it works right now. And that'll be, I don't have the price for that yet, but it'll be less expensive than the current base sets have been. And then the goal is to keep that base set in print for as long as possible. Maybe every few years we might put it out a different one just to keep things fresh, but that is the core rule book, if you will, you know, for your game, the console. And then the discs the adventure pass or the maybe even shorter adventures, because this new format allows us to decouple the length of the adventure necessarily from the proscribed size of a full base set. So we've got the normal base set, and then we're going to have add-on to that that'll be if you want your adventure path. So the first one we're going to do is a Curse of the Crimson Throne adventure path, and that will be coming for the first time to the Adventure Card Game. The new base set and the Curse of the Crimson Throne expansion will release in May of 2019. So just want to go through a couple of more things quickly, and then we'll talk a little bit about second edition, and then I'll open up for questions. But we are going to continue to do accessories. Pawns have continued to be a popular thing for us, so we'll do pawn sets for all of the adventure paths. That should continue even in second edition and beyond, sort of if it ain't broke, don't fix it, so we won't.
And for Starfinder as well, we've got pawns.
Absolutely,
both for the
pawns for Starfinder.
And the Alien Archives.
Yep. One thing that has been really popular for the pawn set was some of the dungeon decor type stuff that we did. So we've done a bunch of monsters and things, but we did some like terrain and settings, including some stuff that you lay flat on the table, like pit traps and stuff like that. I wouldn't be terribly surprised to see a supplement like that come out for Starfinder to provide some sort of sci-fi stuff as well. And then we also just recently released a new product format called Pathfinder Flip Tiles. The Flip Tiles replace the old map packs, those 5x8 cards that we've done. These are 6x6, so it's much easier to make modular, kind of, because everything's the same size. They're also double-sided, so you have maybe a corridor on one side and then the same corridor covered in cobwebs or a different corridor on the other, which gives you a ton of different options. There's 42 different cards in each base set of that, and we've already released a dungeon set, and a forest set is soon on the way. And then after that, we're going to do an urban set, and then in 2019 we'll add one more base set. We'll supplement these with packs of, I think, 18 double-sided cards. So there's dungeon perils. Eventually, we'll probably get to dungeon rooms and things like that. And so we will keep the base, you know, dungeon, urban, darklands, darklands. Oh, darklands is a secret one I didn't want to announce for 2019. And you heard it on No Direction first, folks. And then we also have urban, dungeon, and forest. So we'll do supplements of all those. This is a dangerous seminar to have like late in the day on
anywhere.
Saturday. I'm very tired. I'm going to blow the whole second edition product line here in a minute. Okay, we that's the
here.
Flip tiles. we had a series of great meetings with our partners at WizKids about the Pathfinder Battles miniatures line, the pre-painted plastic miniatures. Those are going great. Actually, they continue to do, you know, each set's more popular than the one before, and we will be continuing to do those, you know, next year and hopefully, I don't know, like forever, because I love those things. So we'll do two sets a year, just like we've been doing. Plus, with the launch of second edition, we'll probably have some special releases in that as well. And then the big thing that I wanted to call everyone's attention to, it's a huge deal for us, is that the first Pathfinder CRPG computer game is coming out this year. And that is the Owlcats Pathfinder Kingmaker game. You can already, there's a bunch of videos on YouTube already of people playing the beta of this thing. It's coming out on September 25th of this year, so next month. We're 6 weeks away from a Kingmaker computer game. It's very much in the style of the old sort of like Fallout 2 or Baldur's Gate, that kind of approach and style. It is a... it really, really, really uses the Pathfinder rule system. They've made some little tweaks that work, you know, in the computer better than on the tabletop. But boy, it's going to be a lot familiar. It's got a ton of classes. They've even got the Magus in there. They're planning on adding more classes. Lots of adventures. They've adapted the entire Kingmaker adventure path. They've added some new stuff. One of the chief writers on it was Chris Avalone, who is a very, very good video game writer. He wrote Fallout 2 and Baldur's Gate and a bunch of other fun stuff. And so he's been working on that game. I would encourage you, if you're interested at all, to check out some of the actual play videos on YouTube. I think it looks really cool. You know, I'm an old man, so it looks like a bunch of cool old video games I used to play. I hope you'll like it too, but the graphics are much better than they were back in the day, but the gameplay feels very familiar, both because it's Pathfinder and because it's like a lot of those games that we all played X years ago. Okay, so here's the thing. I don't really want to talk too much about second edition in terms of what we're going to release and what the product mix is. You might be able in the Q&A to trick me into some accidental reveals, but we're not really talking too much about what the actual product plan for second edition is going to look like publicly. Really want to keep the focus on the playtest at the moment, but you can rest assured that a lot of things that were true in first edition will also be true in second edition. We're going to be going, you know, with a core rule book, and that core rule book is going to include all the rules that you need to play.
Should I start working on that?
Yeah. You've been working on that. And that'll include all the rules you need to play for either GM or player. One question that we get a lot, you know, with the new edition is, can you split the GM stuff and the player stuff into different books? I don't like doing that. I think that everything being in one book is actually a huge advantage for Pathfinder, and for a couple of reasons. I think that books where you need multiple books to even access the system, what if someone goes to the bookstore to buy that for their kid or for, you know, their friend, and they only have book three? Well, they're probably not going to make that purchase, and that's a concern of mine. And then the other thing, and this is really what it comes down to for me, is that I don't want to let anyone off the hook for having the responsibilities to GM every once in a while. You know, and if you say, well, I don't have any GM books, it's like, yeah, no, you have the GM chapter, my friend. Please help. So hopefully that helps to encourage more people to GM, and it just makes it more convenient to have it all under one package.
As your home GM, I agree with that.
Yes. Yeah. As your home GM.
When are we playing Starfinder again?
I think we already mentioned the Pathfinder Playtest Bestiary, which has 200 plus monsters. Well, we are currently at work on, you know, 200 more monsters for a mysterious project that will also release the same time as the core rulebook in 2019.
It's the best.
We are going to get... It's the best. Yes. We are going to have an adventure path that launches in
subtle.
Yeah, an adventure path that launches in July, and that is actually the current plan is to shift the start of Pathfinder Adventure Pass to July rather than August. So we're going to double up in July with the last first edition adventure path and the first second edition adventure path. And the reason is that right now the way that they break down was always started for launch these new ones at Gen Con. You know, we always try to launch the big new adventure path at Gen Con every year. Well, over the years, Gen Con has gone from being on August 18th or 22nd to August 1st or July 29th and things. It just doesn't make sense to be launching big storylines a month after everybody's gathered at Gen Con. So we're going to shift that over. That'll have the secondary benefit of meaning that every year you have two full adventure paths, and sort of having one that breaks over into January and one that starts in February, so it satisfies my
OCD.
I was going to say mania. We don't need to get specific. Sure. Right. So and then, you know, we'll have world content. We'll have player content. We're going to have a lot of stuff. There will be some differences in the mix of products. In the beginning, I think we're going to slow things down a little bit so that people can digest the system. But there's still going to be a ton of content. Like, I really want to reiterate that the core rules are the core rules, and they are going to have 12 classes in the core rule book, and we are going to have, you know, about the same number of ancestries in the core rule book that are currently in the playtest. I think that one of the things we're all looking at very closely is how we're treating the half-orc and the half-elf. We'll see. The playtest will tell us if the way that these guys put that together is the right way, or if maybe we need to take a different approach. We're real interested to hear what people think about there being a goblin player character race in the new core rule book. And so, you know, those things are up for playtest just like everything else. But, you know, the core rulebook is the core rulebook, and it needs to be relatively basic. It's not the place for getting, like, the world's most niche character concept pulled in. And after we've done 30-plus hardcovers for Pathfinder, you can make some pretty niche character concepts. And we will get to a lot of... I can't guarantee we're going to get to every single thing we've ever done before. Maybe we don't want to do some of those things, or maybe you hated it the first time.
Well, you might have even noticed in the playtest rulebook that the Cavalier is in there as an archetype.
Yeah, so we'll see if that, you know, again, maybe it's not a class. Pretty rare that I think we're going to see that happen, you know, but we'll, if you've got a favorite class, the chances are pretty high that we're going to get to it eventually. And maybe it will be in a different format than you expected, but maybe it won't. And so, like, for example, when, I think I might have even said this already, but, you know, we're not going to say, the witches of Irisin are now wizards. No, we're going to do the witch soon enough, right? So if you're looking at the core rulebook and you're saying, wow, a lot of these options and feats and things seem pretty fundamental but not super exotic and crazy, it's because it's the core rulebook. And we are building a system that is easier, or we're trying to build a system that is easier to teach, a little bit more intuitive, where you have to learn something once and then we can go really in-depth. A good example of that is the new action economy. You have three actions and a reaction every round. That's really easy to explain, and it's a lot easier to explain, okay, there's some actions that are free actions, and there's some actions that are swift actions, and some actions that are immediate actions, but the swift action you can only do once a turn, and the immediate...
And not if you've taken an immediate action in the previous turn, and you hit 5 step, but not if you've taken a move action, and you can't do that unless you've taken it. What?
Yeah. So that's a little much. And so by just saying there's three, you can do three things a turn and one reaction, that seems really simple and it's very easy to explain. But then it opens up a whole bunch of what, you know, what we refer to as design space to do really interesting things. And I'll give two quick examples of that. One is the channeling healing energy for a cleric. I don't know how many of you guys have delved into the playtest rulebook, so I hope this is
too... How many people have gotten a chance to play so far?
Yeah, that's a good question. Oh, geez, not as many as I thought. With all kinds of demos, folks, we'd love to have you play. So, for example, you've got three actions now. In Pathfinder 1st Edition, every healing channel that you do is pretty much the same. You know, it's an action, and you have a 30-foot burst of healing energy. With Pathfinder 2nd Edition, you have more options. So if you want to use one of your three actions, you can just reach out. I can reach out and heal Bulman by touching him.
I feel better already.
If I want to use two actions, I can actually do a distance heal and help Daigle get better. If I do three actions, it's the traditional healing burst that gets everybody.
Thanks.
And I don't think it also hurts undead this time, right?
Is that so it'll hurt Rob. Yeah.
Yeah, so Rob's hurt. So... So that gives you more flexibility at the table. You can explain something basically one way, but then you iterate it different ways. Another good example is the magic missile spell. So the magic missile spell right now is a single action to cast. So I cast a spell, one magic missile shoots out of my finger and hits that guy. And then, but if I want to spend two actions, I get another missile.
Yeah.
If I want to spend three actions, I get a third missile.
And the great part is if you prepare it as a higher level spell, well, you get even more
missiles. So I don't want to go too far into depth, but that's kind of what I'm trying to say is, like, we are building a system that should be easy to pick up, but that doesn't mean that there's not a lot of complexity and depth to the system itself. It's just not buried after having to learn a similar thing seven slightly different ways.
It's all about getting the most amount of depth for the least amount of complexity. We know we need a certain amount of complexity. We're doing a role-playing game. I mean, there's a certain amount of rules and understanding you're going to need just to be able to function in the game. But before, you had to learn seven different ways to do seven different things, right? You know, just take, for example, feats. What we call feats in the current game, in the new version of the game, used to be rogue talents and rage powers and arcane discoveries and investigator, you know.
Ninja tricks.
Yeah, ninja tricks. We started running out of words to put at the end of that. But they're all the same thing. They're all, you get to pick a thing. Your class gives you a thing to pick, and here's a list. But they all kind of worked a little differently. The rogue ones were split into two lists. The barbarian ones had a bunch of level limits and only worked when raging. So they were kind of all over the place. Instead, we were like, why don't we just call them feats, and your class gives you feats. Everyone, we teach you what a feat is once, and now you know what it is when you get to every class. It's not a mystery anymore. It's not an extra thing you have to learn. It's the process by which you pick an additional feature. And now they're just in buckets. You get a class feat or a ancestry feat or a skill feat. And every time you get one of those, we're basically saying you get to pick a new thing for your character. So we don't need a different name for that every time we do.
Well, and you get, generally speaking, to do that more often than you did in first edition.
And every level.
One of the things that I think it's been interesting to watch people react online because, you know, first of all, some of the early reaction mirrors some of my first reactions seeing some of this stuff. And so, for example, you might look at it and go, wow, this ancestry feat seems like it's balanced differently than this fighter class feat, right? And that's actually by design. Those are different types of feats. And so right now in Pathfinder, I have the option when I go up a level, I have a feat, so I have the option to decide, do I want to take like a cool racial trait that, or racial feat that gives me, lets my elf be more elfy, my elf barbarian be more elfy, or do I want to take power attack? Well, that's going to be a tough decision to not take power attack every single time. So by giving people more options and then in different buckets, you don't have to take power attack, which is a no-brainer, at the expense of being a better elf. You can be both. Okay, does that make sense? So I hope it does. We'll find out soon enough if it makes sense or not. But
not all those things are created equal either, and we know that, right?
Yeah.
People say, oh, these ancestry feats aren't as good as my class feats. Yeah, no joke. The class feats are supposed to be some of the most defining features of your character. The ancestry feats are supposed to be important, but they're there to help color and flavor your character. They're not there to define them necessarily.
Which is not to say we got the balance right in all cases.
Yeah,
that's
we'll
what
see.
The playtest is all about. So I will kind of like transition into the questions from the audience, and you guys can answer or ask anything, and we'll do our best to answer. But I will transition that into saying, like, really, truly, Jason and his team, our editors, our developers, have been working on Pathfinder 2nd Edition now for 3 years. And now they are not done, not by a long shot, but now the game is in your guys' hands. And we are very, very, very eager to get everybody's feedback and incorporate as much of it as humanly possible, because that's how we made Pathfinder great the first time, and that's how we'll make Pathfinder great the second time. The difference, in my mind, is the first time around when we were doing this, the goal was to make Pathfinder the best version of 3.5 that we possibly could. That original version did not include archetypes, it did not include traits, it did not include a whole lot of things that I and most people probably in this room consider fundamental aspects of the Pathfinder role-playing game. And so now, for me, the main goal with the second edition of Pathfinder is not to make Pathfinder the best version of 3.5, but to make Pathfinder the best version of Pathfinder. And we're not going to be able to do that without your guys' help. So just wanted to sort of thank you in advance for all of the feedback you can give us, positive, negative, somewhere in between. We will take it all to heart, and we will incorporate it. And with that in mind, and with another, I don't know, let's say 15 minutes left in the presentation, I'm happy to take questions from anyone, and we'll start here in the corner.
I'm really enjoying the Dynamite Comics. Is there any hope for more Tales or Legends series?
Yeah. I think there's definitely going to be more Dynamite Pathfinder comics in the future. I am in a series of meetings that we're probably about two-thirds of the way through to try to both find a home for the, I'd say, about five novels that ended up kind of getting marooned. Basically, we made a partnership with a huge science fiction publisher and thought, well, you know, these guys know more about selling fiction than we do. Maybe not, and that didn't really work out. And so about five books are marooned, and I got to find a way to get those things out. And then we want to do new fiction as well. So we're talking to different partners and things, and I don't have anything to announce, but I would expect to see fiction. Certainly, if fiction is not started again within the next 2 years, I'm going to be really disappointed, and I'd like to get it started sooner than that.
Excellent.
Yep, another question. Yeah, right there.
Hi.
Hi.
Big
fan. Great, thank you.
Just between you and me.
Yeah.
What happened to Aridin?
He slipped
died.
In the tub. Really tragic.
I would say, and I don't, I would say we're not ready to say, but I would say sometime in the last half of 2019, if I end up writing the thing that I think I'm going to write, we're going to get a lot more information on that than probably ever before. So that involves me setting a really aggressive timeline, and then if I fail, going, I'm sorry, somebody else write this. So, you know, but who knows? But I've got a plan, and you'll learn a lot more about Aridin. I mean, one of the things about Aridin that bugs me a little bit, having invented him, is he's like, his death literally starts the modern era, you know, the last 100 years of the campaign setting. And in part because it's my baby, and I'm a busy boy kind of running the whole company, you know, with the other executives. I haven't had as much time to delve into that, and people have been kind of skirting around it to some degree. And so this thing that's supposed to be like super important to the campaign setting hasn't gotten the kind of like full-on treatment that maybe it should. It doesn't strike me as culturally relevant as it probably should be. And so we're going to take some steps to address that as well. And if you just as like a hint of like where we might be going, if you unfurl a map of the Inner Sea and you look at a few countries and you're like, wow, it really seems like there should have been more on that, that's a pretty good bet that we're going to get there relatively quickly. Another question. Yeah.
Regarding Return to Ruinlords goes from 120.
Yeah, that's the goal, yeah.
Do you expect Tyrant's Grasp to do the same thing?
I don't think
so.
No,
it's gonna stick along like the majority of ours, yeah, around 17, 18.
Okay,
and I've been reminded by Jason to repeat the question. That's good advice for people watching at home, and we'll go here. I'm just going to try and rapid-fire these because I know they're going to kick us out soon. Yeah.
Two-part question about website content going to the new edition.
Okay, two-part question. Yes.
Will old website content be preserved, the FAQs, things like that? And in the next year, will we see anything new for the existing edition? Will we see an errata for Ultimate Wilderness? Will we see an update to the PRD?
Okay, that's actually like four questions, sir. So the first question was, let me make sure I get these right. But the first question was, will older material on paizo.com be archived? Things like FAQs. Yes, we're not going to get rid of any of that stuff. You'll be able to find it. The other question was, what was the other question?
Will we be re-releasing?
Anything new for the old stuff? Certainly in the form of like products after July of 2019, not new products. We'll be doing some of those reprints that I mentioned. In terms of errata and stuff like that, yeah, it's certainly possible. You know, we know a lot of people are still playing that stuff, and if there's an issue that those folks are having with their game and we're able to figure out the time to put together a formal answer that people are really desirous of, I think
it's worth noting that, you know, we love first edition Pathfinder.
Yeah.
We've been making it for 10 years.
Yeah.
And if people want to stick with it, that's great.
Yeah.
You have a game that you like and you want to keep playing it, please by all means do. And we're going to continue to support it in what way that we can. Which, you know, errata and FAQ is kind of the least we can
pretty
do.
Pretty reasonable, yeah. And I think one of the things that's also true that I didn't mention is that the Pathfinder Society Organized Play Program is going to be starting a new, you know, second edition version of that campaign, but we're not retiring any of the scenarios. If people want to play through that whole, you know, series, they can do that. They can register their games just like normal. So there will be people playing first edition Pathfinder, you know, in some ways, kind of hope forever, you know, but you know, as long as there are people regularly playing those things, they're going to generate questions, and those questions, you know, we'll do our best to get to them. Can I get another question in the blue?
So you said for Pathfinder Society, we're going to still get to keep playing them
I think there's still going to be first edition games at Gen Con.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are those like gradually going to fade out?
I mean, I think that just like the, you know, we're going to keep the soft cover rule books in print, but we're not going to keep them in print indefinitely. We'll keep them in print as long as they, you know, in publishing they hit a turn rate. You know, as long as they sell this many number so that it's worth us reprinting, we'll keep reprinting. In the same way, as long as people keep playing it, we'll schedule the tables, yeah. I do think, you know, next year, obviously, there's going to be a lot of people who want to play the new game, and so there's probably going to be a significant number of those, and then of course at next year's Gen Con is going to be the big grand finale for the first incarnation of the Pathfinder Society campaign, and I already know what's going to happen, and it's so mind-blowingly eye-meltingly awesome that I can't, I'm going to like camp out in the room and just watch it. Yeah, in the red. Yeah, that's you. Might be orange, I don't know.
But, in the past you guys have worked with Reaper Minis to mm-hmm. put out Pathfinder and Starfinder?
Yeah, so Reaper, I expect to do more miniatures with Reaper. We've got a lot of different miniatures company partners now. WizKids is the big one. They do both pre-painted and unpainted in their Deep Cuts line. Reaper has, you know, they transitioned their whole business to plastic a couple of years ago and things, and they went from producing a lot of Pathfinder miniatures to relatively few on an annual basis. I think they want to get back into doing more, and we want them to get back into doing more. So I expect that to happen probably in 2019. And then as to Starfinder, our licensing partner for Starfinder is Ninja Division, and they are working hard to fulfill their Kickstarter from some time ago, and we're going to let them do that, and then we'll see. Yes, in the black.
Since the originals are old and wise and heroes, are we going to be looking forward to the second generation goblins?
Yes.
Yes. Figure something out.
Yes. I'm sorry, I keep forgetting to repeat the question. The question was, will we, now that our friendly goblins from all the Weeby Goblins adventures are old and wizened, will there be a new crop of goblins? And the answer is yes. Yeah, in the front.
Hi. I've been really excited, you know, hearing about the changes coming up with Pathfinder 2 and so on. However, I have also been excited for quite some time about the books about, you know, the Book of the Damned and the Chronicle of the Righteous,
yeah,
and so on, and the new one for the Neutrals,
yeah,
coming out. So if we're going to make the change to second edition, are we even going to want to buy the Neutrals one?
Well,
and if so, and if not, are we going to wait for 10 years for the second edition?
Okay.
Version come out?
Okay, these are long and complex questions.
Sorry.
So that's good. No, it's a good question. So the question is, if we are going to be transitioning the rules in a short period of time, what about these last few first edition books, in particular the Concordance of Rivals book? Will it be any value to us at all if we plan to convert to second edition? And then will we have to wait 100 years for a proper version of those books in second edition? Let me hit the first one of that first. The good thing about the previous books in those lines, like the Books of the Damned and the Chronicle of the Righteous, is there's a lot of flavor in those books. They're a little lighter on the rules content anyway. And so, yeah, I mean, I think in terms of like, what's the deal with that Imperial Lord? You'll get that answer, and that will be useful going into the future. We have identified certain types of content that we really need to get out as soon as we possibly can. I would put in just broadly, now this is not universally true, but monsters from the first two bestiaries we need to get back into the ecosystem as soon as possible. The next half dozen classes, you know, in terms of popularity and utility to the game. You know, it's like we can say, no, the witches of Irison are not wizards now, but they do need to be witches soon. And that's incumbent upon us to make that happen rapidly. We are, you know, we will have stuff about the outsider races and their realms and things. Having just done Planar Adventures, which covers a lot of that, and is relatively rules light, specifically because it's kind of a campaign setting in a way, that material will all work with second edition. edition in terms of the concepts. Whether the feats and things, they probably will need some tweaking, I expect.
Will there be any guidance for that tweaking?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to make this guy do a conversion guide, which is not going to be as easy as it looks. Yeah, but and it's probably, it could be some more like advice rather than like an exact science. But we need to give people some guidance.
I didn't expect this to be a meeting where I got a whole bunch of extra chores.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Oh, by the way,
yeah. Problem-tunity. Yeah.
So I think we are going to take one more question, and then I got to call it, and I'm going to go with the guy in the front.
Will for second edition, will the campaign setting and the rules be intertwined?
Yes.
Starfinder?
It remains to be seen if, like, say, the core rulebook will have as much Galarian content in it as the Starfinder core rulebook has Pact Worlds content. I would say probably not. We've just got so much. we're already bursting at the seams, and we know we've got a lot to add, you know, just content-wise. There will be more Galarian content in that book than there is in the playtest version.
I'm hoping that there will be an entire small chapter that talks about the world of Galarian. But I don't want it to overtake the book so much that people who are not, using the game for, you know, in Galarian, don't feel like it's taking over the entire book.
Right. That said, there are a lot of things about Galarian that developed actually after the core rulebook and the first bestiary. So something someone noticed the other day on the message boards was that now a lot of the undead actually speak Necril, the language of undead, which they never did because we came up with it after, you know, the bestiary, stuff like that. And the giants all speak the Jotun language, which is a new name for the giant. There's stuff that's going to feel like it's a little bit more integrated. There's the Wayfinder, for example, is in the core rulebook, the symbol of the Pathfinder Society. So, yes, there will be more integration between all of the stuff than there has been in the past. Whether it's to the level of Starfinder, we'll see. I'm really eager to hear what people say about the amount of Galarian content in the book as part of the playtest. And that's probably a great way to end this. Thank you guys so much for your time. Really appreciate your patience. Thank you. We're really, really, really looking forward to hearing what you have to think about the new game. So can't wait to read your surveys. Thank you very much.